The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC alongside Chaka Hislop. I'm Sebastian Salas. Great to have you with us on a huge week in world football. Of course, we've got the Champions League semifinals coming up. We're going to preview the first leg between City and Real Madrid in just a little bit. And what better way, Chaka, to ring in the new week than yelling at a referee? Mark Clattenburg is going to stop by.
That's what they're there for.
To defend all the controversial refereeing decisions from the past weekend. But we've got to start at the top of Ligue 1 because that's where PSG clinched a 10th all-time title in the French top flight over the weekend despite dropping points. However, that's not the real story. No, the story is that the reports out of Paris breaking overnight that Mauricio Pochettino is going to be sacked imminently. For more on this, we call on Julien Laurent and Stuart Robson. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Jules, I'll start with you. Is this true? Is this the end of the Poch era at PSG?
Yeah, I don't think it's imminent as in now. I think he will finish the season, but it's very unlikely now that he will be there next season, despite still having a year left on his contract. I think the way the season went, despite the title, obviously in Ligue 1, the football that the team has played, despite all the players that he had at his disposal, was very underwhelming, very disappointing. And I think the club seeing the season as not a really good one overall. And that's why he won't. I'd be very surprised if he was still there next season. Let's put it that way. I haven't got it confirmed yet by the club that they're going to get rid of him and of his staff. But it looks very likely that he won't be there. Whether they can get Zinedine Zidane on the bench, Antonio Conte, I don't know, whoever they want. But it seems that the Poch era after 18 months, more or less, is coming to an end.
Jules, you mentioned Antonio Conte. That's, for me, the really interesting part of this report, that he has offered his services, a two-year contract, to PSG. Is that what PSG wants? Would he be their first choice?
No, the first choice will be Zinedine Zidane. He's been for months now, even since the fall, really, when the concrete negotiation started, when Pochettino wanted to go to Manchester United and PSG thought, okay, we can let you go, but we need Zidane to come in and replace you. That could not happen. Pochettino stayed. We saw what happened after that. But Zidane is still the priority. He's still the number one target. He's still thinking about it. He's got a lot of contact with the club. He knows the Qatari people really well. But in the back of his head, there's also the national team. He knows that he will be the next France head coach. The problem is he doesn't know when that will arrive because he doesn't know when Didier Deschamps, and none of us do, not even Deschamps himself, when he will step down. He's got an incredible generation. There's a World Cup to come and then the Euros. So this could still be a long time for Zidane to wait. Why not take PSG now and then take over the national team? So he's still thinking about it. If Zidane said no, then I think Conte, who is clearly quite keen, although his camp has saying like, well, it's not completely true. I think it is true. And he will be among the shortlist, of course. The problem for PSG is that if Zidane said no, then apart from Conte, there's not many managers that they could go to try to win the Champions League. And I'm not even sure that Conte would be the right guy because he's someone who's always failed in Europe, for example. So why would he bring the Champions League to the club?
Bravo, you love Antonio Conte. I wonder what you make of all this. The fact that he's potentially, if true, we have to say that, these are reports, offering his services to PSG while under contract with Spurs and potentially think about going to PSG when he's not even the first choice there. What do you think of it?
Well, it's not great news for Spurs, is it? They're trying to get into the top four. You've got your manager offering his services somewhere else. And as Jules said, I'm not sure he's going to be a good fit at PSG if he went there because he's somebody that is very dictatorial in the way he wants his team to play. He wants his star players to toe the line and do what he wants them to do. You've got some difficult players he's going to have to deal with. You know, Zidane, as when he was at Real Madrid, is a good man manager. He lets the players go and express themselves. I don't think he's a top tactical coach, but he's a manager that allows the players to go and play. He makes them feel happy. Antonio Conte is completely the opposite. And I don't think it would work with him at PSG.
The boys on the show yesterday, Chaka, called it disrespectful. You agree? You think this could be real damaging as Robbo points out, to Spurs kind of in the moment right now, this top four chase?
Absolutely. It's disrespectful on a number of levels that PSG are pursuing a manager who's in a job, and even more concerningly, that manager seems to be the one doing the reaching out, or starting the reaching out. I don't understand that at all, given the climate around football and players and managers under contract. I'm with Jules and Stewie on this. I'm not sure that Antonio Conte is the right fit. We could sit here and say, well, PSG's issues has been around defensive responsibility, and Antonio Conte may be the man to come in and deal with that. But just in terms of how PSG play, the personnel they have right now, I don't see how the current staff, the current playing staff, and Antonio Conte make this work.
Mm. Jules, what about Mauricio Pochettino and all this? What do we suppose would be next for him? We've seen the links back to Spurs. Is that a realistic opportunity?
I mean, I would be amazed, I have to say, if he went back. I don't think it would be a good thing for him, because I mean, it's just me, but I don't like those return to and those romantic stories of, hey, let's pick it up where we left it kind of thing. He left for a reason. He left because things were not good between him and Daniel Levy, because he arrived at the end of a cycle. I'm not sure he's ready now to start another cycle. I'm not even sure that Spurs right now want to start a new cycle. They need to build on what they have, and I'm not really sure where it fits in that. The problem is, he wanted the Manchester United job. We know that for sure. He got interviewed for it. He didn't get it. He failed. They prefer Ten Hag, and they appointed Ten Hag now. So what's next for him if he doesn't stay in Paris? Well, he will get a very nice check to start with, and a lot of money as compensation, which can, you know, keep him on holidays for a few months. But then he will surely want to go back to management. But where? The Premier League? But right now, if you look at who could be looking for a manager, this is not clubs of, I guess, that he would want to coach. So it'd be very interesting to see where he goes. But I do think that the season, despite the league and title, his season at PSG hasn't tarnished his image or what he's capable of, but certainly showed a few doubts, maybe, and a few limits.
Robert, at that point, where is Pochettino's stock right now coming off this PSG experience?
Well, not as high as when he went to PSG, because they didn't do particularly well in the Champions League. That second half disaster against Real Madrid. They haven't played great football, as Jules has said. When he was the manager of Southampton, when he was the manager of Spurs, everybody liked him because of the style of football, the high pressing, the expansive football going forward. They haven't seen that at PSG with all the players they've got. So at the moment, I think his reputation has just gone down a little bit. He's going to have to rebuild it somewhere. But where that is, I'm not sure.
Do you think Spurs would be a good spot?
I think Spurs right now is the only spot. But I'm with Jules again. I am against Pochettino. I just don't like the look.
Nobody on the show is romantic. I mean, nobody wants to see a homecoming.
We're just realistic. I'm not sure that we've ever seen that work. A manager sacked unceremoniously, as he was at Spurs, goes to PSG. His stock goes up, and then all of a sudden plummets over the last 12 months. Some three managers later, Spurs are trying to get Pochettino back, given how they parted ways first time of asking. I just don't see why it works. But again, to Jules's point, right now, if Spurs decided to part company with Antonio Conte right now, who comes in? If PSG decides to sack Pochettino right now, where does he go? And I don't think that there are any other answers. So it might end up, by default, us being default romantics to your question, Sebi, but I'm just not sure that it's as romantic an ending to this story.
Jules, from a French perspective here, I thought it was very interesting that in the last game for PSG, the boos were really targeted, it seemed like, at least social media reports, towards Pochettino. Do they blame him more than the players at PSG for this season and the failures?
I don't think if they blame him more. I think they roasted the players for a long time. And let's not forget that the ultras especially left the ground before the end to celebrate the title outside because they didn't want to celebrate with their own players. So the players still very much at the heart of the protest. I think the boos for Pochettino, as we mentioned the other day, on the show, there's a few things. One is the football has been dreadful, let's be honest here. Considering the players that he has, it's been poor for most of the season. Secondly, he had some weird comments again, and I think his communication again at times has let him down. Basically saying, oh, I've got a contract. It's not about what I want to do or my desire. It's just a contractual situation. It's not really what you want to hear if you're a fan of a football club. You want your manager to be committed, to be engaged, to want to be here. And clearly, I don't think Pochettino wants to be in Paris next season anyway. And then the third one, there's some fans who thought that because the title was won a few weeks ago, because of that terrible exit in the Champions League, it was time to play some of the kids. We've got in Paris an amazing academy with really, really talented youngsters, 16, 17, 18. You don't have to start them all and all playing 90 minutes. But surely a lot of fans felt that he could have given them some game time, even in Ligue 1, or certainly more than he did. And I think that was also part of the boost towards Pochettino.
Hi, Jules, speaking of strange comments involving contracts and involving PSG, I don't know if you guys saw this in an interview with our very own Gemma Soler. Neymar said this after the match, quote, "It was surreal that part of the crowd left the stands. They're going to get tired of whistling because I have another 3 years left on my contract." Jules, you love Neymar. What's your reaction to that quote with your PSG ways?
Well, you know, I'm happy to whistle. And if he plays better, I stop whistling. I mean, what is he expecting? This is fans' culture for you. He's your star player, or one of your star players. He doesn't play well. And what? People are going to clap and congratulate him when he doesn't play well. This doesn't work like this, Neymar. This is not what happened. You don't deliver, you don't play well, the fans are not going to like it. So they're going to boo. This is what, in any other club, it would be the same. So unless he gets back to playing better, be more decisive, scoring more goals, more assists, anything you want, I think there will always be an issue there, because right now he's too far away from the level that he should be at that club for the fans to be happy. That's where the problem is.
Bravo, what about you? What do you make of what Neymar says? It sounds kind of like he's challenging the fans, doesn't it?
It sounds as though he is, and I agree with Jules. You know, if you don't play well enough, and over the years, Neymar sometimes hasn't played well enough. He hasn't been effective enough. He's got all the talent to go and be an effective footballer that scores goals, great chances, and every time he gets the ball, looks threatening. But he wants to do so many other things, and he wants to try and do what he wants to do. And I think he lets himself down at times. And that's why fans get annoyed. And that's why even fans of other clubs just get annoyed with him by watching him. So he can expect some stick at times.
If I needed somebody to give Neymar some love on this show, I feel like you'd be the person I would go to.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure where I'll start with this one. I think Neymar's comments are even more than just a challenge to those fans. I think it is a slap in the face of the PSG fans in many respects, because the fans are booing because they don't feel he has lived up to expectation, that he has lived up to what he's earning salary-wise, or what they expect from this team, from the PSG team, which he was brought in as the first piece of this project, and he was the face of everything that PSG was supposed to be becoming. And nothing has worked out. And rather than appreciate or take some responsibility around that failure, your response is, well, never mind me and what I'm doing. Never mind that I'm not living up to that expectation. I'm here for 3 years. So it doesn't matter what you think. And this, again, goes into my kind of... Why I find Neymar as frustrating as I do. I just do not feel at any point he recognizes his responsibilities to the team or his responsibilities to his own God-given talent. It's as though we are all supposed to be thankful that he's here, regardless of what his performances look like.
I'm sure it'll work out between him and Antonio Conte.
That'll be fun. No, that's a romance novel, right? That'll be smooth,
no doubt. So listen, we blame Neymar, we blame the manager. What about Leonardo? Because Jules, he had a very kind of cryptic but interesting quote here. "With me, it is difficult. Without me, it is impossible." It sounds like he's saying PSG would be worse off without him. Do you agree?
Yeah. No, definitely not. And I think he knows his head is on the line here. He's part of the problem too. I mean, I think a lot of us, being PSG sporting director, could have signed Messi, could have signed Donnarumma. I mean, when you have so much money and when you know football, it's not very difficult to go and get those talents. The biggest job as a sporting director right now is to be able to also sell players, and don't get it wrong, with the lesser names, which Leonardo has been catastrophic at. So, of course, he's under pressure. And when he's under pressure, because he's such a good talker, for that, he deserves a lot of credit. Then he starts having those sort of punchlines. Oh, you want to get rid of me? Okay, but I tell you what, without me, it's impossible. The very Zlatan Ibrahimovic-esque Leonardo, by the way, who knows Ibra and who's bought him in a few different clubs. So it's remarkable. He might survive, to be fair to him, because he's that good of a talker. But I also think that right now there's a lot of people within the club, around the club, who are also looking at other options as sporting directors because he hasn't been good enough.
With me, it is difficult. Without me, it is impossible. That's actually on my ESPN business card.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. For you.
Plenty more from Jules on the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast. You can download it today. There he is, basking in his PSG
whistling
glory.
Whistling at somebody or the other.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Bayern and Dortmund find themselves on a collision course. A chance for Bayern to become the first team from any major European league to clinch a 10th successive title. Here comes from Kimmich, Goretzka and Gnabry! Perfect serve for Bayern on what could be a special, special day. Zagadou got caught there, Müller, and you cannot do that sort of thing with Robert Lewandowski in the vicinity. A sea of red at the Allianz Arena. Bayern are on their way to another title. Pavard, and he got the ball, as indicated by referee Daniel Siebert.
It's an open soul and he plays actually first the foot of the player here.
And the challenge comes in, and that is going to be a penalty. Emre Can for Dortmund dispatches it back in the game. Pavard puts in the challenge. Bellingham looking over towards referee Daniel Siebert.
He lets it go.
Musiala and clawed away. Might still be alive. Jamal Musiala has surely put the seal on it for Bayern. It's official. Bayern have written their name in the annals of history. A 10th successive league title.
Bayern make it 10 Bundesliga titles in a row with their 2-1 win over Dortmund over the weekend, but not without controversy. Here's a quote from Saturday's ref, Daniel Siebert, on Benjamin Pavard's challenge on Julian Brandt early in the second half. You saw it there in the highlight. Quote, that was the biggest mistake in the game, and I'm annoyed about my judgment of this incident. Pavard caught Brandt's ankle. It was therefore a clear foul and a mandatory yellow card because the ball rolled exactly in the direction it would go as if Pavard had played it in the game. Unfortunately, I made the wrong judgment and indicated he got the ball. I'm happy that Brandt was able to play on. Of course, whenever we have a controversial moment from a referee, we call on our refereeing expert, also our Bundesliga expert, Mark Clattenburg, the referee expert, Jan Agafjortov, our Bundesliga expert, Rabo still with us as well. Mark, let's start with the decision that we just heard, just read the comments on from Siebert, the referee. He says it should have been a yellow. Do you agree?
No, I think it's a red card. I think once that player's out of control, I don't think this was his biggest mistake of the match. I think there was a bigger mistake in the match. However, when the challenge comes in, studs are high, on the top of the ankle. For me, this could have clearly endangered the safety of the opponent. This player could have been carried off. Lucky enough, he didn't. But you can't judge it like this there. When you see it like that, for me, it's clear. What was the VAR doing in this situation?
Robbo, what do you think? Yellow or red?
I would have probably gone with the yellow. I'd have given him the benefit of the doubt. I can't actually give a reason. If I was asked to make the decision, I'd say a yellow card. I don't think it was quite bad enough to be a red card. It's a foul, definitely a foul. And I would have given him a yellow and a big, big warning. Any more challenges and you're off.
All right, Jan, be my tiebreaker here. What do you think?
I would go for red. I spoke to the Dortmund leaders after the game, and before we did interviews, and they came over to me and said, Jan, do you know about this rule they have in the German Bundesliga that A, they couldn't get a red card against Bayern and we can't get a penalty when we play them? Do you know about this rule? I think it's rule number 27, quote a Dortmund leader. So there was a lot of annoyment that people were annoyed after the game.
So Mark mentioned actually another incident in this match, and Siebert actually discussed that incident as well. Why don't we take a look at the quote that he had, the referee for this match between Bayern and Dortmund. This on Benjamin Pavard's challenge on Jude Bellingham. Pavard doesn't play the ball. Instead, his leg impedes the run of Bellingham. So by the letter of the law, he brings him down and it's a foul. That Pavard later touches the ball is irrelevant. A penalty would have been the right decision on the pitch. Pavard blocked my view of the decisive contact with his challenge. It's a matter of, if in doubt, let play go on. Mark, from a referee's perspective, like, I think everybody in the world loves that we have a referee here in the middle of a controversy who's being this transparent. Do referees like this level of transparency?
I think not. Many, many years ago, I think all referees were against it, but now football's moving so far forward. Referees have to be transparent, and I believe, and I like this, I actually like his comments. It gives him, even though he's wrong, I like the understanding, and it gives people a chance to understand what went through his mind and what the end decision is. Because when we see this incident, for me, it was so clear that his positioning wasn't the best. And if he'd actually moved inside the penalty area, he would have witnessed that the ball wasn't played. The ball was only played secondary after the foul challenge had came in. So, first of all, his positioning, but it was nice that he did explain it afterwards.
Mark, we love the transparency. Why don't we see it elsewhere?
I think everybody's scared of how it's, you know, people use it. I think in this way, the referee makes a statement afterwards. I think this is probably the first step forward. Interviewing referees straight after the match when it's quite raw, the decisions and the pressures, I think this is probably something a bit too far at the moment. But I certainly like the idea of referees explaining the decisions afterwards.
Jan, what's been... Go ahead.
Yeah, I just was something was a bit wondering me after the game, because, yes, I agree with Mark, the good that the referees sometimes say something. Sometimes they make it worse for me as a player. I remember back in the days when it came out afterwards, but that is another thing. But it was interesting, because when you saw the cameras that we had as a TV producer, when we watched it, it was clear that that had to be a penalty. But I was told after the game that VAR in Cologne, or VAR, had less camera angles available than the production team. And I find that, I'm not saying 100% if I'm right here, I was told this, and I think what is that all about? I mean, shouldn't VAR have all the camera angles in the world? So the viewers at home got a much more possibility to make a decision, right? I think that's very, very strange. I heard the numbers. I'm not clear on this, but they were saying that VAR had 10 different angles, and we, as a viewer, as working there, had 20. What is that all about?
Mark, your thoughts on what Jan's saying?
It's very correct, because a production team have maybe 10 or 15 people working to find the best angles in split seconds. The VAR is only one person, and therefore he only has the chance to be able to have 10 cameras. This is, you know, usual standard practice. They take the angles that are the most important. However, they do have the live TV feed inside the VAR room. And if a VAR is clever enough, he can use the AVAR to look at the main screen and to see what the TV companies are also showing, because, as we know, TV companies can give you sometimes better angles, maybe from behind the goal. So if the TV company had this angle, the VAR should have used it in the best way forward by looking at the live feed, because even from, I think, one angle I've seen it, you can clearly see that Bellingham's leg was taken away from him before any ball was played. So, you know, the VAR should have had enough angles there to give that decision.
Chaka, you like from the refs?
I can't believe that then the referee's not going out and have a look at this. I mean, he had the possibility to go out and have a look. This is, look at the score, it's 2-1. We are talking about the German Bundesliga Championship Trophy here. Championship Trophy. And he doesn't go out and do something about it. I don't think that. I think that was a failure. I probably wanted to go on here afterward explaining it instead of having a look at the monitor.
I was asking you, you like hearing from refs?
Concerningly, I'm in agreement with everybody all day today. I do like hearing from the refs because I think we all can see when a mistake is made, and we all, as players, you know when it happens on the field, and oftentimes when you don't hear from the ref, the interpretation is wrong. The interpretation is that they believe they're right. They believe that they don't. There's nothing for them to answer to. And it just speaks to how certainly players and some of us in the media regard refs about being overly arrogant in what they do. And so to hear a referee admit that he's made a mistake, while we all know it's a mistake and we'll all call it as such, that human side to the story, I think, gives us a better understanding and a better appreciation for what they do or sometimes why they get things wrong.
Transparency good, Robbo, but it doesn't really help Dortmund right now, does it?
It doesn't help Dortmund because it was obviously a penalty and the VAR obviously didn't do his job properly. But I like what Mark said. It's absolutely right. You can't have a referee come on the TV and be interviewed after the game or maybe on the Monday morning because, as I've done it with Peter Walton at times, you can catch him out. You can make it difficult for him. He said, well, you said last week, and that's not what you want. You want a statement. The statement was absolutely right from the referee. In his view, he wasn't going to give a penalty because he wasn't quite sure, which I think is the right decision. But VAR should have intervened and told him to go and look at it, as Jan just said.
All right, Mark, don't go far because we got plenty more controversial decisions to discuss from the weekend in the Premier League. But I do want to focus in on the fact that Bayern here have won their 10th straight, let's say it again, 10th straight Bundesliga title. Jan, it's the same question we ask you all the time, but is this good or bad for the Bundesliga?
Well, I think it's interesting to discuss that because there are times that we should discuss if the Bundesliga through this getting boring, less excitement. I think the answer is yes. What should the other teams do? Because I think this is not about Bayern. I think that Bayern should also get the respect that they've done this 10 times. They have a fantastic winning culture at that club. That is a winning culture that's been taken from generation to generation after the fantastic teams they have in the 70s and the leaders with Uli Hoeneß taking them on. Of course, for the German Bundesliga, about their global brand and everything, this doesn't look good. I saw an overview of all the teams that won in that time, and this is the only top five team. I mean, Juventus had 8 or 9 maybe some years ago, but this is not good for the Bundesliga. They have too few personalities, branding thing of the league. And if they're winning every time, that takes away the excitement in and around the world. They don't have the best players. Now they have Lewandowski, Haaland, maybe both are going out. They don't have, except for maybe Julian Nagelsmann, the best coaches as the Premier League is having. So this is not good for them. So, but I always say, and I've said this for 2 years, there will be excitement soon in the Bundesliga.
great stuff from Jan there. Always as Bayern Munich win their 10th consecutive Bundesliga title. Simply sensational stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you challenge the club that Bayern Munich have.
How do you challenge this, Shaq? How do you challenge this? Jan, usually you're with Archie Rintut, right? But you missed Saturday's celebrations and you missed a beer shower.
Yeah.
I hear you have some background,
you know,
intelligence.
A coincidence?
Uh-huh.
I think
well,
not.
There is something called experience, and Bastian Schweinsteiger had got a lot of experience. And I was standing 20 meters away with a fashion raincoat. I was prepared. And they saw that. And they wouldn't go after me, probably because I don't have enough titles as Bastian Schweinsteiger have as well for Bayern.
I wonder how many titles Archie has, because he got some too. All right, let's take a look then at the Bundesliga schedule for the upcoming weekend. Of course, all these games available for you on ESPN+. Action starts Friday, Union Berlin against Greuther Fürth.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, to the top of the Premier League. City and Liverpool winners over the weekend, so the gap at the top of the table still just the 1 point as to the race for the top four. Spurs dropping points against Brentford in a 0-0 draw. And the huge result, Arsenal 3-1 winners over Manchester United, a game full of controversy, which means we welcome back Mark Clattenburg as well as Jan and Rabo. So many incidents from this game. I think we did like a 30-minute segment on the day of the match here in ESPN FC. Let's go incident by incident here. We'll start with the first incident, first half. We'll call it round one or edition one between Anthony Elanga and Nuno Tavares. Here it is in the 15th minute. Mark, what's the correct call here? Should it have been a pen?
No, I think it's play on. I think football's a contact sport. There was a little small contact on the shoulder. That's not enough for the player to go down. I think he just loses his balance. Ball just gets away from him, goes down. For me, this would have been an extremely soft penalty, and it would have been a red card as well, because he wouldn't have been challenging for the ball, because it would have been a hold. And for me, this is the best decision, is just to play on.
Extremely soft penalty, different from what you said on the show yesterday. You said it was a penalty.
I didn't think it was a penalty, but as the game went on and you see how the rest of the game was refereed, see some of the other incidents which we'll talk about in context of what came, what was given as a penalty, this for me was also a penalty.
Rabo, I need you for a tiebreaker again. What do you say?
Yeah, not on this one. I wouldn't have given a penalty for this one. I agree with Mark. I think Elanga was already going down or trying to run across Tavares. And Tavares, yes, he did put his arm on him, but I wouldn't have given a penalty for that one.
All right, second incident, shouts of a handball against Cedric in a one-on-one battle with Jadon Sancho in the penalty area here. Mark, everyone pretty much agrees that this should be a penalty, but it's not given. Is it a bad call or a difficult law to interpret that's the issue here?
Yeah, because what the referees are thinking, and the VAR is also thinking, is once you put your hand to the ground, that's supporting your body, so therefore the hand is in a natural position and where it should be. However, I don't see it like this, because what I do see is another movement by Cedric, and he scoops the ball back. There is a small movement to the ball and not where the hand was. If the hand was there originally and the ball hit the hand, okay, I can say play on. But the hand seemed to go towards the ball and make a little movement to scoop it back, and therefore I believe there should be a penalty kick.
Shaka, what did you say on the show yesterday?
Penalty. Yeah. I said, given the fact, I think Cedric is looking at the ball and placing his hand right where the ball is, as much as you can see, yes, he's trying to brace for the fall. I think it's a little bit more egregious than that penalty for me.
All right, Mark, what about Elanga Tavares, round two, in the second half? And again, not given as a penalty. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a penalty. This is sure there is a contact. What I do see from the reverse angle, and from the referee's angle, I can understand it looks like there could be just a coming together player. But what you do see is the Arsenal player is clearly not looking at the ball. He's got his arm wrapped around his leg, and it starts off outside, which is interesting, but it carries on inside the penalty area. And because it carries on inside the penalty area, it has to be awarded as a penalty kick.
So how have they missed it then, Mark?
this is where it goes down to this, what we all get frustrated at every week is what's a clear and obvious error. And, you know, they did have this reverse camera angle, this is for sure. So the VAR had this chance to look at this image and they believe that there was just a coming together of two players. But I believe that they've got this wrong and the VAR should. And this is what we're frustrated at, I think. VARs are refereeing the match. And I believe the VAR should do his job properly, say to the referee, look, I believe what you've seen out your two eyes isn't what we're seeing in the images, and go and have a second look. If the referee stays with his original decision, fine, I accept it. But we're seeing more and more of VARs refereeing the match, which is dangerous.
Mm. All right, Klatz, last one from this match, the third goal for Arsenal. Shouts of an offside on Nketiah and whether he was interfering with David De Gea. Do you think he interfered with the goalie? Should this have been overturned?
See, I would like to listen to Shaka Hislop's opinion on this because he's, you know, from the Goalkeeper Union. What we believe as referees, and just to give our feedback before Shaka speaks, is that does De Gea have a chance to see it? I think he's blocked by his own player, which is the first point. Yes, he's blocked also by the Arsenal player, but I believe he's blocked by the Manchester United player. And the shot is that good, I don't believe he would have saved it anyway. So I don't want to try and give an excuse by an Arsenal player being in his line of vision. I don't believe De Gea had a chance to save it, and it was blocked by his own man also.
Shaka?
I think that's an offside. I think, first of all, Lindelof as a defender approaching the ball, he takes on a kind of squatted position as defenders do, and Nketiah is standing upright. And if you look at De Gea's own body positioning, he's having to look around Nketiah as opposed to Lindelof. And that is the bigger hindrance to David De Gea. So him having to look around Nketiah, who's in an offside position, interfering with the goalkeeper, the distance for me does not matter. I mean, it is a wonderful strike, and whether Lindelof and Nketiah were there or not, if David De Gea would have gotten it, is another debate. But they're there, and Nketiah impeding has to be given.
Jan, who are you going with, Shaka or Mark?
Well, the keepers' union, and I'm always against the keeper union, obviously. the problem with this one is that De Gea is also on the wrong foot. He's landing on the wrong foot. He will never save it. I understand that the keeper union will say that. The good thing about VAR is that sometimes I accept offside now with VAR. It's taking me some time, but I accept that. But this is a tricky one that VAR is going to go in and do something about these kind of things, because then they have to start thinking, is that obvious or not obvious, and all those kind of things. I don't like that. And I think that the game should flow more. And I don't think this is the way that they should go and say that it's not a goal. I think that was a perfect goal for them. And if you see here De Gea, keeper union, you'll see it go on the wrong foot.
Well, to answer that question, he's going on the wrong foot because he has to look around Nketiah. And because Nketiah is right in front of him, he has to look around one side, either left or right. So you're choosing a side, and as it happens, he chooses the wrong side, but you have no choice. You have to look, you have to go one side.
Shaka, the gloves you goalkeepers have now, you should never let in a goal anyway. And if the next thing now is not that, okay, so you saying if you have a shot, there shouldn't be man in front of you because that make it difficult for a goalkeeper. I don't think you should take that into the offside thing. I think in this case, in most cases, we should listen to Mark, and it was very sensible what he said, instead of the goalkeeping keeper union at this stage.
All I'm saying is, if there's a man in front of the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper has to adjust, and that man is in an offside position, and the goalkeeper has to adjust as a result, then that's offside. If Nketiah is standing right in front of David De Gea, De Gea has to pick one side to look around. He has to look around him. He has to pick one side and at best hope it goes that side to give yourself any chance of saving it. But unless Granit Xhaka says to David De Gea, oh, I see Nketiah in front of you, I'm going to your left, you cannot blame the goalkeeper for going that side, for being wrong-footed.
But Shaka, should we come there that we're going to discuss how much the Arsenal, the goalkeeper was covered by the Man United player or the Arsenal player? Do you think that the VAR should sit and discuss that?
No, I don't. All I'm saying is, Nketiah the opposing player is in an offside position and interfering with the goalkeeper. That's all. We don't have to discuss anything further than that.
Okay.
It's offside.
Final word on this to Rabo. Final word on this to Rabo.
Well, you know, this is what, when you have people talking about decisions and sort of going one way and the other, this is why you can't have referees talking about it after games. In my view, he's offside. He's in an offside position. He's right in front of De Gea. De Gea has to take a step one side to see the ball. He's gaining an advantage. Absolutely offside, should have been disallowed.
Mark, did Xhaka and the goalie union convince you or what?
No, I think this shows an important point that, you know, referees, players, goalkeepers, coaches should meet regularly to try and understand the game and try and, you know, and players should be involved in the lawmaking process also, because you know what, if goalkeepers and all the goalkeepers say that this is offside, then surely we need to adapt and referees need to adapt to make sure that it's the right decision. I can understand Xhaka's argument and I can understand why what we interpret the law as, and we are two poles apart, because we always say that if the strike was that good and the goalkeeper didn't have a chance to save it, therefore we would want to give goals because the game wants goals and not to be choking off offside. So there's these arguments happening all the time, but I understand what Shaq is saying. But what you've got to be careful of as well, if this is a tactic and it's happening on a regular basis, this is not good for the game. So, you know, referees have always meet up every 2 weeks. They'll be discussing this to make sure that this doesn't keep happening, because if it does and players are standing in the centre of the goal, then you're going to have this argument that goals will be chalked off.
I think we could go round and round in circles on this one forever.
Mark hits the nail on the head there. It's an important discussion that continues. We have to continue to have. I think it's good for the game.
Arsenal-Manchester United, not the only match this weekend that featured some controversial decisions in the Premier League. Of course, we had the Merseyside derby as well. Anthony Gordon involved in quite a few. Here's one in the 53rd minute, tripped up from behind from Joel Matip. No penalty given. Mark, what do you think?
This is a big problem because this player got cautioned early in the match for a simulation. He's been doing it for a while now in matches. He's a young player. Does this give a seed of doubt for the referee? Because in this situation, for me, there is a small contact. I don't believe it's enough for a penalty kick. I think he's going down. I think he's looking for it. And I think the referee probably and did make the best decision as it was to play on. The VAR's had a look at it. It feels that the contact is small, and therefore they didn't award the penalty. But the argument from Everton's point of view is they'll say that there is a contact, there should be a penalty kick. And I can understand from both sides where the referees are coming from. We don't believe that there was a sufficient contact for Gordon to go down. And also he's planting seeds in referees' minds now that he's going down too easy. But you don't prejudge decisions, but you're starting to think, if I've got a doubt what we've just talked about with the German referee in the Bundesliga, if you have a doubt, the best decision is to play on.
Go on, Rabo.
Yeah, I would say this is what I saw years and years with Tony Adams, chasing people back on the wrong side, and he got away with it time after time because he gives somebody a little nudge in the back. He doesn't push them right over, but he knocks them off balance so they can't get their shot away. And that's exactly what Matip did. He got away with it. And the common theme throughout all these rules that we've been talking about, all the decisions we've been talking about, they've all been in favour of the home team. This is the biggest difference between playing at home, playing away. You get referees' decisions. And it's as simple as that.
Jan, penalty or no?
For me, no penalty. I understand what Rob was saying is that some teams have never get penalty against them. I understand that. But this is a Merseyside derby. This is Liverpool against Everton. This is That is Bob Latchford, Andy Gray, Tommy Smith, and what all they are called. And we have to be aware, because a lot of the situation we've seen today, it can't be enough to just touch someone. And if they go down, that's going to be a penalty. Then we are losing the identity of our game. And VAR can also not be an instrument to make our game softer. I don't like that development. And then we'll just have to take it from there.
Rabo, your response?
Yeah, I don't want the game to be soft, but in situations like that, when somebody's on the wrong side and they're running into the box, as Gordon was, and he gets a shove in the back, it stops him from getting his shot away because he's pushed off balance. And people say, oh, well, it's only a little shove. It's a shove. He puts his arm in his back. It's a penalty.
There are shows all the time. They're showing. That is football, Robbo, isn't it? That we are showed all the time. They kick you in the Achilles. They are holding your shirt. That is done all the time. Can you imagine if Mark, how busy he would have been if he's going to do
1v1 against the goalkeeper? 1v1 running into the box and you're on the wrong side. Yeah, I'm all for tackling. I'm all for allowing. I was the one that said that Pavard shouldn't have been sent off for the tackle in the Dortmund game. But when you're running into the box and you get an advantage by shoving somebody in the back and stopping getting his shot away, has to be a penalty.
Shaka, what about the point that Mark made that the simulation yellow card earlier in the match impacts the referee's decision? As a player, how do you feel about that when you hear it?
As a player, we are continually told that you're a judge on the incident, not your reputation coming into the game, not anything that happened before it. So you're judged on that one happening. And if it's a foul, regardless of what happened before in terms of simulation, you have to give it. But at the same time, we also recognize, and I've always said, referees are human, and that kind of shades their opinion as well. But it shouldn't. So I'm not sure how you have it both ways.
All right. Are we done with the refs? Are we done complaining?
Until next week.
Klatz, just your final thought on the idea that, because you mentioned it there, and from the player's perspective, we hear it. Should Gordon really be judged on something that happened earlier in the match, the simulation kind of coming into the referee's mind to make that decision? Is that how refs work? Should work?
No, I think, you know, let's be clear about this. Referees don't prejudge players. They don't prejudge the game. They judge each decision individually. However, when a player is simulated already, he's been doing it many times in matches, it has a seed of doubt. So therefore, the referee will, if he sees a small contact, he'll probably just go and play on. And in this case, his reputation got the better of him, because I can understand where Stuart is saying there is a small contact in the back. He may have got it in another day. But in this game, in a Merseyside derby, for me, this contact is so small and he's also looking for it. He's also going down when there's a small contact. For me, I think the referee got this spot on by just letting the game flow.
All right, Mark, we'll leave it there. Great stuff as always. We'll wait another week to yell at you about other referees' decisions, unless something happens in the Champions League. You know, don't hold your breath. So we got extra time coming up a little bit later on. Shaka, Robbo, and Jan taking your questions. Don't miss it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
All right, Champions League semi-final week. Manchester City, Real Madrid, first leg Tuesday. At the Etihad, Wednesday, we got Liverpool and Villarreal. Time to welcome back Jules, as well as Robbo and Shaka. Jules, you've been studying all the permutations here. We know there's some big injury concerns, lineup decisions looming for Manchester City and Pep Guardiola. Your homework was to come up with what you thought would be Manchester City's 11 for this match on Tuesday. Where are the big decisions? Where are the big pressure points right now for Pep Guardiola?
Well, the big one has to be a right back, because Joao Cancelo is suspended to start with. And then Kyle Walker hasn't trained today, hasn't trained for a few days now, like John Stones. Actually, a bit longer for John Stones, who could, I guess, technically and potentially be an option at right back, which means that Pep Guardiola, right now, as we speak, and they will make a decision on Tuesday morning before the game to see if maybe they risk Walker, if he's only 50% fit, or if he's completely out. Same for Stones. So we've put on the team, as you see on the graphic, Nathan Ake, at right back, despite being a centre-back and a left-footed one, but simply because with Zinchenko, Laporte and Diaz, they are the four defenders that Pep Guardiola, right now, who are fit, the only ones that he has. So it's not ideal, and Walker or Stones might end up playing, of course. But right now, this is what the team looks like, certainly defensively. Then, you know, there could be crazy ideas like a Fernandinho option at right back or whatever Pep wants to do. But right now, this is the most likely if you take out, obviously, Walker and Stones.
Robert, what do you make of that 11 that we just saw from Jules?
Yeah, it's a big problem, the defensive side, because if he's fit, Walker has to play, because I think he's got that pace to play up against Vinicius Jr. He'd be a good in 1v1 situations. I think he's their best defender at times, Walker, getting forward and backwards. And Nathan Aki playing on the right-hand side would be a slight problem for him because he's very much left-footed. If Walker plays or Stones plays at right-back, then Aki will go to left-back and Zinchenko will probably come out the side. But I agree with Jules with most of the other players. Mahrez has to play because he's been exceptional when he has played. He scored the most goals. He's a real threat. He'll give width out on the right-hand side. And Jesus, after his 4 goals against Watford, will probably get another chance.
Xhaka, we always hear the narrative about Pep Guardiola overthinking in these situations. With all the moving pieces here, is there a danger of that on Tuesday?
I think there's always a danger with Pep Guardiola overthinking, and we see it in the Champions League in the past. And until he just puts his or who he thinks is his best 11 out there and allows them to play the kind of football that we know they can, we'll continue to accuse him of doing that. But he has so many options. He has so many options all over the park that he can chop and change and not really lose an awful lot. And the big difference, as everybody pointing out, coming into this one, is defensively. And given the threat that Vinicius Jr. poses for Real Madrid on that left-hand side, the one position that you do not want to be guessing at, and Pep Guardiola has to, is at right-back.
All right, so that's the Manchester City perspective. What about the Real Madrid perspective? Jules, we had you come up with what you think Carlo Ancelotti will use as his 11. Some big doubts there as well with Casemiro and Alaba. Walk us through this.
Yeah, so it looks like Casemiro, and suddenly what we're hearing is that he won't be fit enough to play and to start tomorrow. So we've put a midfield of Valverde, Modric, Cruz and Camavinga. I suspect Camavinga will be the replacement for Casemiro to play a bit more centrally, and maybe Cruz a little bit wider if you want onto that left-hand side, and that triangle with Mendy and Vinicius Jr. and Valverde on the right in almost a hybrid midfield, because as we saw against Chelsea, for example, and in other games through the season, Valverde can almost play as a right winger when Real Madrid have the ball, because he's got those qualities. And then when they don't have the ball, you go back to a more solid 4-4-2 formation, for example. So that's the midfield. And then defensively, there's obviously the big question mark over Alaba. Mendy has passed fit, so won't be a problem there. Militao the same. Carvajal, obviously, in Courtois, but Alaba is the other one. He might not, again, be fit enough. And in that case, Nacho would start. Nacho, who is the replacement. We saw him replacing Militao, for example, for the second leg against Chelsea. But they were still hoping tonight that Alaba would just about being fit enough to play and start the game tomorrow.
Chuck, on yesterday's show, we were looking at the odds for this semifinal between Manchester City and Real Madrid. I was kind of surprised to see just how big the gap was. I mean, the oddsmakers really seem to see City as a huge favorite. Robbo, let's get some picks. I'll start with you. First leg score, and who's going to advance?
I think Man City will win over the two legs. I think they're going to win the first leg by 2-0. I think they've just got that little bit more quality than Real Madrid. We know Real Madrid keep coming back and keep, even when they're in adversity, come back and find a result. But I think it might be a game too far for them. I think Man City will win, and they'll win 2-0 at home.
Jules?
Yeah, I think it will be a City win 2-1, because obviously Kareem the Dream is going to score inevitably. We all know that. But yeah, I do agree with Robbo in the sense that I think there's a time where it was not luck against PSG and Chelsea, but they did ride the luck a little bit. And I think there might be a point where that stops.
Okay. Xhaka?
I'm with Robbo, 2-0 in the first leg. I'm going to go Kareem the Dream to score in the second leg.
Okay.
So I'm making my prediction now. You'll probably have to remind me when the time comes. So 2-0 this one, 2-1 to City in the second leg. But like I say, you know, remind me, please.
Do you want to try that Kareem the Dream again? It wasn't quite as enthusiastic as I'm accustomed to on the show.
It will never be. Let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. ESPN FC available for you 7 days a week here on ESPN Plus. We will, of course, be back on Tuesday with full reaction to that first leg between Manchester City and Real Madrid. Let's check in on the Italian top flight. Serie A. Big game on Monday. Juventus 2-1 winners over Sassuolo. Juve now 8 points clear of fifth place Roma. Rabo, you were keeping an eye on this match. It's a huge 3 points for Juventus, but boy, they left it late. Game winner didn't come till what, the 89th minute?
No, and I don't think they played particularly well. Yeah, they created a few chances, but defensively, they were too easy to play against. Sassuolo played some great football. They created lots of chances. They scored a really clever goal in the first half. Juventus, playing in a 4-4-2 for much of the game, looked a bit one-dimensional. They changed it later on to go to a back three and get their wing-backs higher up the field. And they came back. Excellent goal from Dybala and an even better one from Moises Kean, who got himself turned, left-foot shot through the goalkeeper's legs, but it was an excellent turn from him. Sassuolo played their part in what was a very good game in the end.
Juventus big picture, Rabo. They obviously want to be at the top of the table, not in fourth. Mm. What do they need to change?
Well, you wouldn't have known that by their celebrations. Their celebrations after the game as if they'd won the title. They need to change one or two things. I mean, I wasn't particularly impressed with how static they were in their 4-4-2. You know, and it was too easy to play against them. Rugani probably won't play too many more games for Juventus, I wouldn't think. They played with Morata up front with Dybala. That didn't really work as a combination. So we know that Vlahovic came on and Kean came on as well and scored the goal. Bernardeschi didn't really affect the game. And I don't like Rabiot playing on the left-hand side of midfield. He was much better when they went to a back three and he tucked inside. So there's lots of things that Allegri can do. But the good thing from their point of view, since Christmas, they've been a much better side than they were before. Because the reason they haven't won Serie A or not been near where in Serie A is because they started so badly.
Mm. Just four games left in the Serie A season. Juventus right now looking all but a lock to finish in that top four. Plenty more from Rabo and the rest of the crew over on our ESPNFC YouTube channel. My goodness, well over a million followers. All the bonus content and bonus material from the show. Don't miss a single segment.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know, brother. That sounds like some goalie union work there.
Just trust my judgment, Sabi. How many times do I have to tell you?
I will trust your judgment. More on Extra Time. We're joined by Rabo and Jan. Stay with us. Your questions next. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition.
Hey there, everybody.
Of ESPN FC's Extra Time.
Hey there, everybody.
Jan, Rabo, Shaka, Seb, with you as I scramble to find the questions.
Look at how much papers you have.
The beauty of live television.
What's going on?
You should see my bedroom. Just a mess. My office really is more like this.
No need.
For all your opinions on Rudiger's move to Real Madrid, of course, this has been reported of late. Rabo, start with you.
Well, he's had a great season, hasn't he, at Chelsea? A good season and a half. He seemed to be out of the picture under Lampard at Chelsea, but he's a very good player and I think he fit in very nicely, whether he plays alongside Militao or whether he plays Real Madrid or whether he plays alongside Alaba. That'd be the question.
Mm. Seb, for the gents, the January transfers currently, which one has been genius and which one is a disaster? All right, let's go genius first. Is there a genius winter transfer window move?
All the moves by Newcastle United.
There it is.
Can I go with that? Newcastle, top half of the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were rooted at the bottom of the table in January. And then all of a sudden, everything. So take your pick. Yep. For Newcastle.
Yeah, hard to argue that there's been a team that made more of the changes that they made in January. Any big winners from the January transfer window for you, Rabo, other than Newcastle?
Oh, I was going to say Newcastle as well. No, I don't think there's been too many great ones. I can't think of one off the top of my head. Most of the good signings were in the summer. PSG made some great signings in the summer, but hasn't worked out for them. So, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Mm. What about disasters? Because that's really what this show for.
That's what we're interested in.
Yes. Let's chase those YouTube headlines. Jan, what's been the worst signing of the January window?
I just think in general, all transfers in general is disastrous. But I'm with Robbo here. I think I'm working hard to see the good ones and the bad ones here. So Shaka got an easy one because he could only say Newcastle. I mean, so.
Yes, I did.
Next question for you as well, Jan. Given the specific way Pep's teams play, would Haaland be able to fulfill his goal-scoring potential under Pep? Wouldn't he score more at Madrid? Appreciate your constant clarifications on the rumors about him. Where would Haaland be more successful, City or Madrid?
Well, it's a very good question because there's a lot of people saying that Pep he wouldn't fit into the Pep way of playing. And the most used argument is that he never played with a big striker, a big number nine. And it's also an argument saying that when Lewandowski, he would play with Lewandowski at Bayern, he put Lewandowski a bit out on the side. I think there are two things that it's important to when we discuss this. Is that point one is that Erling Haaland is not your typical number nine. He is more also a counter-attack striker. Having said that, Manchester City is not a counter-attack team. They are that too. But I think that the main thing is that Pep Guardiola think he will fit them well. And I think that will make Manchester City better to get that kind of player. I'm 100% sure that Erling Haaland, whatever he goes to Real Madrid or Manchester City, and as an outsider by Manchester, Bayern Munich, he will keep on scoring goals. There are all three clubs. They have so many assist kings in their team. Thomas Müller, De Bruyne, Modric. I mean, have your pick. I wish I had that pick when I played football.
Jan really going out on a limb there. Wherever Haaland goes, he will score goals.
Yeah, but to the question, at Real, memory serves me correctly, Real Madrid have a pretty good strike already, don't they? I may be going out on a limb with that. So I'm not sure how, but to Jan's point, yes, Haaland will score goals wherever he goes. Where's the right fit? No, and certainly right now, you don't replace Benzema.
Love the next question. To the boys, in your playing days, what's the biggest fine you ever paid and what was it for, Robbo? I'm sure you were paying a lot of fines back in your day.
No, I've got to say, I never paid a fine. The only time I nearly paid a fine was when I first got my car as a 17-year-old, and I hit traffic. I left myself about 3 hours to get there, and I hit bad traffic. And Shaka knows all about London traffic. Mm-hmm. I was slightly late, and Don Howe walked in and said, that car's going to cost you a lot of money, isn't it? You got the insurance, you had to pay for the car, and now all the fines for being late. But fortunately, let me off.
Jan, biggest fine, and what was it for?
Yeah, but this is a long story. I tried to shorten it. There was a Bundesliga game. We had an unbelievable useless coach, and he didn't put me, and he didn't put me on. So I put myself on. I was standing next to him. I got in and scored a winner. To make this story good, I had to score the winner, which I did. And after the game, on my way out of the pitch, I decided I have to try to get this coach fired, which is never a good idea. So I went live on German television and told everybody that this coach that they have hired has come to a wrong department of the club. He was supposed to go to the athletes and not to the football department. So on Monday, this coach gave me a fine that must be now 30,000 euro at that time. And they said, if you don't pay it in 2 days, you won't go with the team to Leverkusen. And I just turned around and told him, okay, all the best in Leverkusen. And Shaka, 1 week later, he was fired.
Hey! Oh, yeah. But did you have to pay the fine?
Careful,
is the big Shaka. Question.
Be careful, Shaka. He'll try and get you out soon.
That's right. Be nice to Jan.
But it has to be said, I mean, the club wanted to fine me big time. And I said, I will give it to charity. And I think I gave 2,000 euro to charity.
Do not cross Jan. Jan, next question for you as well. Who do you think had a better chance next season to challenge Bayern for the Bundesliga title? Leipzig or Dortmund?
Also a good question, because Dortmund, if and when they lose Erling Haaland, it seems they will get Süle, who is a great defender from Bayern Munich, of course. It looks like they can get Adeyemi, the young talent from Salzburg. I have also said that they may can get Timo Werner from Chelsea, but that is just a gut feeling that he can end up going back to Germany. There is talking about getting Schlotterbeck from Freiburg, a young, talented defender. They are useless in defense this season, Dortmund, so they have to do something there. The good thing about Leipzig, they can play a whole season with Tedesco, who has been done miracle for them after Jesse March left. So I would say, and in this case, I would say Leipzig will have the... They have in depth, they have a great, great squad. So to choose one, I would say Leipzig.
I love Jan's analysis. There's useless, and then below that, there's unbelievably useless. Final question here. If you guys were to compare yourself to playing style of one player from today's generation, who would it be? You need to stick to the player who also plays in the same position as you played.
Ooh.
Bravo? Oh, hang on. He says, hang on.
Hang on. I'm going to go with Gundogan. There we are.
Ooh.
Oh, Manchester City. In terms of, I would try and be as effective as I could be. I'd make runs into the box, do the defensive side of the game as well. A bit of everything from a midfield player, which I think midfield players should have a bit of everything.
Love that. Jan, how about you?
I'm starting laughing here, but I would like to compare myself with Robert Lewandowski, scoring goals for fun, have a great view of the game. The only problem is he doesn't speak a lot.
Yes, that is a difference.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm gonna. This is gonna sound weird. I'm going to go Ben Foster, right? Mm. And I know he's had his trials this season, but I think technically he is a very solid goalkeeper. And I like to think
he can't play with his feet either.
Well, I tried to keep it short by saying technically he's a good keeper. That's all wrapped up in technically he's a good goalkeeper, Robbo. That's goalkeeper speak for that.
Yeah. Listen, Shaka, I remember when the ball came back to you, you had to pass it out from the back. Oh, my goodness gracious.
No, I never passed it out from the back. No defender I played with wanted it. No defender I played with wanted it to the back there either. So it was a match made in heaven. Me and that
defense. Who was better, you or Steve Grzybicz with your feet? Because I played with Steve Grzybicz.
And
he was
behave
hopeless.
Yourself. I was better than most back in our day.
Better than say most.
Back in our day, nobody played with their feet.
I played with Erik Torstvedt, and his second touch was a tackle, so I know how to play with keeper.
Yeah. Torstvedt was size 17 or something like that, so you figure that out yourself.
All right, guys, great stuff. That's it for this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Thanks for all your questions. We will be back tomorrow. Huge day, Manchester City, Real Madrid in the Champions League.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.